Hi, I'm Brenna Ardron, and you're listening to For Your Healing Pleasure. This life can be rocky, which makes healing a big part of it. I started this podcast as a space to explore all that promotes healing. Through the voices of guests, healers, and thought leaders, I hope you gain bits of inspiration for your own healing journey. I believe together we can heal. So without further ado, for your healing pleasure. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the For Your Healing Pleasure podcast. Today, I have my friend Elizabeth Burton, and we are going to be just having a kind of fluid conversation about our own experiences of really embracing self-love. But we're talking about it through the lens of the opposite vibration, which is of self-hatred. And this is something that I've definitely experienced in my life. It was kind of the reason why I even started my spiritual journey. And so I'm excited to talk to Elizabeth about this topic. So Elizabeth, if you want to introduce yourself a little bit, who you are, what you do, and then you kind of were the person that like brought this idea forward, and then my sacral responded to it really strongly. So I want just to hear like what your experience around this topic has been.
Sure. Yeah. Hi, everyone. I am so excited to be here with Brenna. Brenna and I met at Milana's Integrative Energy Healing. And so that is definitely part of my title, I guess I would say. My introduction is that I am a facilitator of breathwork and energy healing, along with an expert email marketer. I have a job in tech. I was literally at the office just before this. So I very much live this dual, non-binary, I like to say, kind of life. My pronouns are she, they, and in terms of self-hatred, I think, oh man, it is something I was maybe born into a little bit. I come from a family that's very mixed, that's very blended, and my mom's side of my family did not like or respect or honor my dad's side of the family because they're Mexican. Mm-hmm. And so even like as a baby who was come into this world out of wedlock, born by a 20-year-old unmarried mother, it was the situation where I did not want to own my identity, and I did not want to or know really even how to love all of the different aspects of myself. And that pattern being repeated over and over again, this kind of like self-denial and self-rejection blossoms into hate. And unfortunately, there were a lot of like hateful behaviors that I was engaging in. And I know from your story, Brenna, that like that is something that you have dealt with a lot as well. So maybe you can chime in and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. Like, I think that just you talking about like the start of your story and just feeling this feeling of not really being welcomed or wanted, like just from like the context. I don't know that we always like take time to appreciate like how those stories can continue throughout our life and really kind of serve as an underpinning to our evolution and like our spiritual development. So thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that. And yes, I think that for me, some of the like behaviors that I engaged in with that I wasn't consciously engaging in them because I hated myself. You know, oftentimes that's not like something that we're conscious to at all. But I think that like in our culture, it's so ever present for us to not be in acceptance of ourselves. And I think that that is in some ways a form of self-hatred. It can be really subtle and like really kind of sinister in the way that it comes in. But I think that like even the market or even the way that we're marketed to in our culture and society is very targeted towards like preying upon our deepest like fears and insecurities. And something that I'm like really coming online to more recently is just the fact that like it's okay to like desire things to be different, but also like it's important to know who you are and like honor who it is that you are. And I feel like when you're not able to do that fully is when you're more vulnerable to like these other things coming through. And so to circle back to like behaviors of like self-hatred, like, you know, I've had periods of time where I've like overdrank and like slept with people that I shouldn't have, or, you know, felt like I needed to like really gotten into a lot of credit card debt, buying things that like I thought I needed to be enough in some way. And I think that like, yeah, that's kind of how it's shown up for me, but I'd love to hear like what that has looked like for you.
Yeah, I'm like, let's talk about the drinking and the sex and the spending, because all of that for sure is a part of my story. In college and in high school, or I grew up, as I said, like to a single mom. I had a younger sibling. It was just really the three of us. You know, we moved away from my grandparents when I was quite young. And so it really was like a little triangle, a little triad. And I have such an interesting birth story, which is that my mom didn't want to have me or was very scared about having me and scheduled an abortion and was in a hospital, or sorry, was in a hotel by herself the night before she was supposed to have this abortion. And she turned on the television and it was like, what's the word? Televangelist, right? And the televangelist was like saying to the camera, there's somebody out there who's, you know, wants to get rid of her baby, but God is telling you like not to do it, not to do it. And so she did it. And I think it's a beautiful, miraculous story, but it has also shaped my life in such an intense way, because my mom has this very strong belief that like I am her miracle baby and that she has to protect me and isolate me and make sure that I'm always doing the right thing, you know? And it manifested in a lot of control, in a lot of fear, in a lot of sort of guardrails. And I grew up in a very Christian home. And so as I was kind of experimenting in high school and trying to figure out my identity and trying to figure out how to fit in, I really split my personality. Like the person that I was at home was like very demure, was very, you know, good and well-behaved. And then the person that I was at school was somebody who wanted to go out and drink with her friends and fit in and be in a community. And from a very young age, I just started lying a lot because that was the easiest way to kind of keep these dual personalities or you know, these dual behaviors really, and not get into trouble. And I thought that that's what I had to do in order to have friends. And because I wasn't able to talk to my mom about a lot of the things that I was experiencing at these high school parties, I developed some really dangerous habits around drinking too much or more than I could handle, blacking out, getting into dangerous or sketchy situations. And a lot of it was also due to the fact that I hated that I was lying so much. You know, I didn't realize it at the time how unhappy that was making me, but having to live this like two-faced, this lie really like every day was making me feel like I was a sinner and like I was gonna go to hell and like, you know, I didn't deserve to be saved as a baby. And so, you know, I should just end it all now. And it was a very intense time that I truly didn't come out of probably until COVID, you know, until I was forced to be with myself and really reckon with how I was treating myself and how I was treating other people. And it's been a long journey, but the drinking, I'm like, was a very big part of it and something that I have like many, many, many stories, some of which are like entertaining and some of which are just sad. So I like take your pick.
Yeah, I want to circle back to the drinking, but what I want to talk about first is I think that duality is so common. Like I've definitely like, especially when I was younger, I got into the habit of lying a lot because I think that something can happen, you know, when we don't see that we're being loved or accepted for who we are, just like really for who we are without any sort of conditions. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's anyone's fault. I think oftentimes it's well-meaning and it comes from a place of like love turned into fear. I think that's a really like real thing that can happen. And I think that's something to be honored. And also it can feel really uncomfortable for the person that those fears are being placed upon, because then you're like, oh, well, if I'm not lovable for really being myself and like in all of my exploration and in all of my curiosities and like all of the stuff that emerges during adolescence and young adulthood, then it can feel really, well, that fear goes somewhere. And oftentimes, yeah, like for me, it like still existed, but then you like try to displace it in lots of different ways. It's interesting. I like have been delving more into the gene keys this week.
Okay.
And super, super fascinating. And I'm like, there's so much information there. Yeah, no, really, like there's so much information. Like I feel like I'll go through these phases of like, I mean, you know this because you also have a one line in your profile, but like, I don't know if you've experienced this where you're like, you're researching something for like no apparent reason.
And like, literally, I feel like my birth chart last night, I like printed it out and like did all of this research for like, and I was like, what am I like? Obviously I was studying because I was just, like you said, the one line, we can't help it. But right. Yes, 1,000%.
So I feel like I've been in that phase with the gene keys, and like, I feel like the first day of that like period can always be like, oh my God, like, what is this all like? How am I going to possibly like distill all of this information into something that's useful? But I feel like I'm starting to like integrate pieces of it. But what's interesting is, so I have, my life's work is in gene key 30, and that Gene Key controls like desires and kind of like experimentation through desires. And it's interesting because that's like the shadow aspect of that Gene Key. So like it kind of shows desires as this like this thing that's necessary for evolution. Like we have a desire to do or try something, and that in a lot of ways is necessary for society to evolve. Mm-hmm. But desire also is like, can be a curse, because every desire opens up a new door of possibilities. Like desire can never be fully quenched. Mm-hmm. And so we constantly are in this like stage of experimentation. But one of the, like, they talk about there's like a repressive nature of the shadow and then a reactive nature. So the repressive nature is like trying to squelch all of your desires. And that would be like maybe sometimes what like, you know, religions or, you know,
our conditioning
or whatever, yeah. Our conditioning will tempt us to do is like, oh, like if you can't desire this, you can't desire that, that's not safe. Like, don't do this, don't do that. And so, you know, to stay safe, like just repress all of your desires and like, don't pursue anything. And then on the other side of that, the reactive nature of the shadow is someone basically, being flippant. So that's the word that they use within the Gene Keys, and like trying to quench every desire and pursue everything. So have every experience. And you can see the danger in that as well, of like someone being interested in like being like, I want to experience every type of drug. And so, you know, they experience every, or I want to experience the depths of like, and you could see, or like, I want to experience the rush of gambling or whatever. And I'm just picking these things out. I don't think that there's like, but you can see how in society we see someone who's flippant and kind of pursues all of their desires without really regarding what long-term effect it would have. Mm-hmm. As being like a problem. But the problem really lies in like, because desire is this impossible thing to be quenched, you really can never, that's not going to help. Like that flippant nature is not going to help. But I think that it's interesting because all of that to say, I think that we have these seasons of life, and I think that like where you oscillate and you do need to have some of this experimentation, but I think that it's better when you have some place to go to actually feel safe and loved, that like you don't need any of these external things. You don't need any of these external experiences in order to truly like be loved and be seen. Mm. And with regard to like over drinking or some of these like really, I don't know, these like almost abandoning experiences, like I feel like that's kind of how I see some of them. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a problem with drinking, actually. And, you know, I don't drink very often now, but, you know, I had a season of life where I drank very heavily, but I think that a lot of that for me was surrounded around like escape. It also was a way that I was able to feel freedom in a way yeah. that I hadn't really experienced in life. For a period of time, I felt that people were able to see me in a different way when I was under the influence of alcohol. And, while none of these things are actually true, I think that in a lot of ways it opened, I don't know exactly how to articulate it. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, but I feel like sometimes we can have experiences that like kind of open up these portions of ourselves. And then eventually we're like, oh, I don't need this substance to open up this portion of me. Mm-hmm. Like I can just, this is just something that's a part of me. This free, fun, loving person is just a part of me. And I think that like the, I guess like the guise of alcohol or like that particular substance is sometimes like we may get that thing, but it's almost like playing Russian roulette in a way where like you don't know really what you're going to get. You're releasing some of your control to the substance. And so I think that that can be not great at a certain point when you're like, oh, like I don't want have the desire to release my control to this substance when it's not even necessary for me to. I hope that makes any sense, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on like that and your experience with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little confused. It's fine. We're going to work through it. We're just going to chat. The desire piece is super interesting to me because one of my teachers and friends, mentors, like a coach, a person that I just respect so, so much, their name is Ray Dohar. And one of the things that Ray has just instilled in me is that our desires are a gift from God and that mm-hmm. our like life responsibility is to figure out how to fulfill those desires. And like, we deserve everything that we desire. And I'm just going to keep saying the word desire because it feels good. And what you were saying about like, you know, people don't necessarily need to try and fulfill all of their desires or be flippant about it. I'm like, I'm trying to make sense of that a little bit. And the thing that came to me was like, well, maybe it's not that they're being flippant about their desires. Maybe it's just that their chakra system is like out of balance. And so, you know, they're being motivated to do something from a place of imbalance. And so like aligning that would actually fix the flippant desire situation. And does that make sense? Let's just like stop there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that like, that's definitely right. It's like, there's some sort of like imbalance in the system. I think that like through the Gene Keys perspective, this is kind of like the way that I've come to understand this key, and I'm still, you know, contemplating it. But I think that like what they know is that desires in and of themselves are not bad or negative. Mm-hmm. And we are meant to feel all of like the desires that come through our space. And I think that like the either side of that nature or either side of either repressing desire or being like flippant about desires is more trying to escape desire in some way by either like engaging in every desire. One example someone used was like someone like going to a bar and then getting really drunk and then seeing someone that they didn't like and like screaming at them and then wanting to leave and escape the situation. And so getting in their car and like driving home. And it's like each desire is like, I have a desire to like have fun and go out and drink. And then I have a desire to like yell and like punch this person because they made me upset. And then I have a desire to like drive home because I want to go home so bad. And they kind of are like almost having tunnel vision on each desire, but not really like thinking about how like the whole, not having any consideration to like morality or like what actually like, because they're like, each thing is going to make me feel, is going to each pursuit of desire is going to free me from desire, basically. It's like a very like heady topic because, and I feel like, but I think what's really interesting about it is like, you see also, and this is like where I've started to consider it is like, and this is another thing that they say as well, is like when you're engaging with, or like when you're truly feeling into a desire, then it may fall away as something that you're like, oh, like I had a desire for this thing and then the desire fall away. And then sometimes there are desires that actually continue to live and you do pursue because there's such like a strong desire that actually is something that you're being called to experience. But we have so many desires that come within our space that like we may not be able to pursue every single one of them. Yeah. And also there's always going to be, I think that like the myth of desire as well is that there's going to be a space where we've reached every single desire. Like we no sure. longer have a desire for anything.
Yeah.
And I think that like, we see this all the time in culture of like, people that have all material desires and then still there's like a want for more. There's always something next. Mm-hmm. And so I think that like that's, I guess, yeah, that's like that aspect of things. But I do think that it's like what they talk about, the gift of this particular gene key is like the gift of, and now I'm blanking on it. The gift of lightness. So it's just kind of seeing, yeah, like seeing life as like, okay, you know, I desire this today. And so I'm going to really feel into that desire. And then tomorrow I may desire something different and I experience things as they're called into my space. And I kind of, you know, but seeing like the game of life as what it is.
But and I that guess, to me, like yeah. feels like self-love. That to me mm-hmm. really feels like someone who is balanced and who understands that we are here in order to have more joy and more peace and more light and more goodness and to wake up every day and think about like what is going to fulfill my highest self and help them to like expand in their lightness to me yeah. is like ultimate self-love.
For sure. But I think that it's like it's definitely I think that it's like it's a practice to embody because we get like in thinking about things through this lens of like, yeah, true lightness, true, like the true ability to be like light with this experience of life. Cause there's a lot of like for every good experience, there are going to be things that like maybe on its face don't feel so good. Mm-hmm. And like, in order to realize it all as being a game and all as like being a part of what life is, like you kind of have to like take this like broader view of things. But I think that like it's really interesting because even with like really being able to feel into desire, the desires that we have that like maybe we haven't been able to experience yet, like you see in hear it all the time where people will kind of be like, they'll start to dream about something and then they'll kind of backpedal because they're like afraid of really feeling into that thing. They're like, and I do this myself, like you're like, oh, well, I want a house that looks like this, but it doesn't have to be, you know, that big and it doesn't have to like, and you start to like backtrack on these desires because we have this like fear of really feeling into that in its entirety because of like heartbreak and, you know, all of this different stuff. I feel like we're like, I mean, beautiful tangent to go on to, but like, yeah, I think that that lightness, like oftentimes when I feel into like my highest self, she does have this like very light aura of like, what's the big deal? Like, it's all beautiful. It's all a part of the game. It's all, but like, you know, it can be challenging. It can feel challenging, you know, to really expand into that version of self. And I think that that gap is like what's super interesting, like realizing there's always like more love to be had for yourself. I don't know if that just like came forward, but
how do you like get yourself there?
I think that awareness is definitely like such an important piece that I've realized. Like even what I was saying about like the way that we're marketed to online, I don't really like, I think that I'm trying to think of exactly like how to articulate this. I don't really think there's a problem with companies marketing towards like, if you have dry skin and there's a product that like helps to quench dry skin.
Like, sure. Yeah.
I don't think that that's like a pain point, whatever, and could feed on someone's insecurity. Like, I don't think that there's a problem with that. But I do think that like you, if you feel like I can't be loved because of my dry skin or whatever, just to use it as an example, fill in the blank of whatever insecurity
you're so crusty, can't be loved.
Right. Then I think that that is where it needs to be checked. And so recently when I've like kind of felt myself get into that mode where it's like, where your desires start to like turn into something that's like a little bit like, if I don't reach this place, then I can't be loved. Yeah. And I think that that's, or I can't truly love myself. Then that is like where things get really sticky. Yeah. What about for you?
Yeah, I think that's the whole game, man, is to figure out how to, you know, take as much personal responsibility as you have access to recognize that the world is full of notions and promises and is going to bombard you with, you know, ideas that are coming from people who don't necessarily have the same understanding or beliefs that you do. And so we have to own our own happiness and self-love while recognizing that we're in a really imperfect and broken system. And the fact is that the practice of breath work and the practice of energy healing and being in community and dancing and recognizing and being aware, like you said, of the things that do bring me that fullness and sense of love. That I think is what I mean when I'm like, those desires, it's my responsibility to fulfill those so that my cup is full and I can then overflow and be an example and facilitate, right? Like that's a thing that you and I definitely share, is that facilitation gene, that desire to lead the way and to show people, you know, you can have this just as much as I have this. And it's special and it's hard. it's both, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely both. Like, I think that even what you say, and like, I think that you know, the practices that we do that make us feel most loved to ourselves, like, could look different depending on the day, could look different depending on the person. And it's like really about your own relationship to yourself. And I think sometimes it's seen, I don't know, it sometimes can be seen in that duality of like those periods of time where you really were not engaging in that. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, that's not it. Like, I know what it isn't, mm-hmm. you know? And then I think that it's always something like that you can grow into and expand into. But I think that like even talking about like the experiences that you have for yourself that fill you with the most love, I think that's so beautiful. And it's also so energetic. Like, I think that it's really interesting. Like, obviously both me and you are like, love breath work. And like, I think it's so magical and great, especially in community. I think it's so fantastic. But like, you know, those experiences of like, I've also had, like, I was thinking about the other day of like, when I felt most, like, one of the experiences that I felt like most one with myself was like being in the Mediterranean Ocean, because it's like so salty. So like you float and you're so buoyant and it's just like the coolest feeling.
Wait, were you actually there or?
Yeah. So
were you in the Mediterranean?
This is when I studied abroad in college.
Oh, I thought you meant like very recently. I'm like, excuse me, what? Okay.
No, I wish. I really want to go back. But like, no, I feel like I go back to that period because, you know, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. But I feel like I had like so many wonderful experiences and painful experiences when I was studying abroad. But you know, those periods of expansion can come in the like most unusual moments. Like we wouldn't necessarily think that they would come in that way.
Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, well, life was just like this. And then all of a sudden I felt this like oneness and wholeness. Mm. And I think that like, it's really, it's interesting because, I think there's so much, I think self-love is so important. And so there's so much information about it and like how to achieve it. And I think that like the way that I've started to realize it is that like, it's, there are so many different pathways towards it. And so there's no perfect way to achieve like this love of yourself. Like it can look so many different ways and it's unique to every single person. And so, you know, for anyone that's listening, like just figuring out what is your way that feels like where you feel at most one with yourself or whatever. And then even just starting with like awareness around like where you're not feeling that way or things that are coming into your space that are like making you not feel that great, you know?
Yeah.
I want to circle back to drinking because I think that like, I don't know. I think that some of these behaviors, like in some ways can feel very like, it can be, feel like I am doing what's right. I'm letting loose. Like I'm having fun. I'm doing what's right for me. And then they can sometimes have a turn where you're like, oh, that's not actually what's happening. So I'd love to hear like what your experience was and maybe like how you shifted your relationship with that or even what the catalyst was to you being like, this ain't it. you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I knew. So the thing is I'm very rebellious at heart. And I don't want to do what anybody tells me to do. I just don't know. And so because I grew up and alcohol was like just not acceptable, not a sip of alcohol was just as bad as getting blackout. And so I was like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to get blackout and go crazy and be out of control. And, you know, blah, nobody can tell me anything. And I had to figure out how to honor that person, you know, that side of me that still is this like disruptor and doesn't want to abide by the status quo and sees, you know, how to live an alternative lifestyle and all of this stuff while maintaining my own inner peace. Because what would happen is I would black out and I wouldn't remember what happened. And the next morning I would have to like piece together, number one, like, where's my phone? Where's my wallet? Where am I even right now? And it was scary. There were definitely times when I woke up and I truly like did not know where I was, did not know how I got there. And I would say really mean things to people when I was drunk. And, you know, I think that that was a reflection of my own self-hatred that I was just like letting loose on others. And it was very hard to be my friend, I think. And it was also very hard for me to change because the group of friends that I had, like, that's just what we did, you know? And people, it was like funny to a certain degree. And I've been in a long-term relationship. I'm married now, which is wild. I just got married like a month and a half ago. So it still is very new and fresh and exciting. But
which is so exciting.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's a whole, I'm like, we should have a whole other podcast on marriage because I also did not want to get married. And it like took me like a very long time to come around to it. But basically, I realized that my behavior was just hurting the people that I loved the most. And I didn't want to do that anymore. It was so exhausting to have to like go through the drama of putting things back together after like a night out that I didn't even remember. And so I used to live in Vietnam and when I was living in Vietnam, I thought I was really happy. I thought I was like pretty well balanced in terms of my relationship to alcohol. And then because of COVID, I had to move back to America. So I came back here. We moved to my now husband's hometown of Columbus, Ohio. And it was just like not my vibe. I did not. And it's nothing against Columbus. It just like wasn't for me. And my husband is a chef and he was working like 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. And so I was literally like by myself, like all day, every day. I didn't have any friends. We had one car, but he took it to work. So I was like very isolated. And I just stopped drinking because I was like, it's expensive. I'm not going to drink by myself. And I don't think I was ever truly like alcoholic in the sense that I needed alcohol to make me happy. I think it was more like I had wired my neural pathways from such a young age to think that the first sip of alcohol equals like 1,000 sips of alcohol, you know, like it was just as soon as I took one sip, it was very hard for me to balance or to know my limits. And so I had to go really slow.
It's interesting that you say that, because I like kind of, when I like initially took a break from drinking, I realized that about myself too. It was like, I never had the issue of like for me, like drinking alcohol is much more situational, but like once I got into those situations and kind of got the train moving, I was like, I associated alcohol with fun, like just having more fun, like the party continuing. And so I was like, who wants to not have more fun?
You know, exactly.
But like, I also, you know, would go on these long, like, I didn't black out a ton, but like, I will say once I started to have more blackouts and brownouts, that's when things started to get a little bit scarier for me. But I will say, like, I had experiences where, you know, you're day drinking and you've been drinking on and off for 12 hours. And like on hour 12, you're not behaving at your most prime.
Just like, you're not behaving like full stop.
You're not behaving full stop. Like, it's not happening anymore. Yeah. And I think that like, that is like, I want to delve into more like you talking about like what healing looked like around like the version of self that would come out when you like when you would say mean things and like just not be like, I don't know, because that's like a really interesting thing. I'd never really thought about that version of myself, you know. That's like, some people say that like, I don't know, there are a lot of like, I can't think of the exact like saying right now, but people talk about like alcohol being truth serum, and I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think that I've said a lot of things under the influence of alcohol that are not necessarily true.
Yeah.
But I think that like there's something different about that version of self being real, like a real part of ourselves. And I wonder like what your processing around that looked like.
I think it was less intentional probably than like the way that I'm going to talk about it now. At the time, it just, I recognized that something needed to change, and I began experimenting with breath work and being more dedicated to journaling and spending a lot of time in meditation, very, very inward, right? And like by myself. And I do look back and recognize that that version of me wanted community and wanted to be accepted and, you know, grew up with, frankly, a lot of trauma and needed an outlet where she felt like she could release and not have to be in control of every situation. And it started with forgiveness, and it started with wanting to not feel like a split person anymore. And I knew that she was sorry and she deserved love is like a little bit of what it was. And it wasn't like it was one breathwork session and then like everything was hunky dory. You know, there was a lot of revisiting and making amends, literally like with myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's so real. I mean, it's definitely not one breathwork session, though I wish it was that way sometimes. I mean, even now after years of doing breathwork, it's like, it ain't just one breathwork session. That's gonna like the constant journey. Yeah. But yeah, I do think that that's like, it's really interesting what you said about like that process of kind of like going back and making amends and giving love to that version of self. And it may not always show up as like, oh, this is like the version of, at least for me, it didn't necessarily. Like, I wasn't consciously always like, oh, like I'm making amends with the version of myself when I'm blackout drunk and not nice to people. Like, it's not typically that way. But I think that, like, you know, when I had my first, I've talked about this to a few people recently, but like, so I was kind of like dabbling in spirituality, like for the whole year of 2018. And like, I'd had a pretty traumatic year in 2017. It was like, I like hit a career rock bottom, a financial rock bottom. I like moved to a different, like there were just like lots of different changes, and I was in a really toxic, negative relationship. And I've talked about this a bit on the podcast, but I had at the beginning, so 2018 was a big rebuilding year for me, and I learned a lot. I kind of dipped my toe into spirituality and manifestation and all that different stuff via, you know, The Secret and lots of different tarot readings that were in varying levels of like, you know, good and, you know, like, lots of different stuff. And then at the beginning of 2019, around my 25th birthday, I had a session with Milana Snow, who's now or has become my teacher and Elizabeth's teacher. And, I had a Reiki, or at that time she was calling it like Reiki, but it was energy healing and breath work. I didn't know that that's what the session was going to be, but it opened me completely up. I was taking an Alexis Smart flower remedy that was for like love.
Yeah.
Which, have you taken any of her flower remedies?
So, okay. I am experimenting with microdosing right now. So I'm going to like finish my microdosing protocol. Yeah. And then, yes, I literally was like looking at her site the other day. I'm so intrigued.
Yeah, I'm taking one now, but I've taken her remedies for years now on and off, and they're so cool. So yeah, and so cool that you're microdosing too. We need to talk about that, at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, so had this like energy healing session, super, super intense, opened me up. Like there were a lot of things that were like processed. And then, I was taking this remedy, and then I had a really disappointing birthday, and it was like my whole heart just like opened up.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And it was so painful to go through at the time. But I think that like, what was really interesting is I think in a lot of ways that was like kind of the beginning. It wasn't like that wasn't the moment that I was like, I need to change my relationship with alcohol. I need to change my relationship with relationships, whatever. It wasn't like everything changed from that turning point. But I think that so much happened as a result of those experiences. And I almost had manifested like this perfect little picture of how much I was like validating externally for love and how that was never going to make me feel as loved as I deserved to feel.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that propelled the journey of what happened next. But I think that like, it's really interesting because when I had that session and then I didn't really come back to breath work for, several months. I think I just like needed some time to integrate. And then I was called back to doing a lot of group breathwork classes in LA. And once I was called back, it was like a lot of most of my first couple of sessions were just like me crying.
Yeah.
Because I was just like,
same. Yeah. It's just like standard. You just have to like purge.
Yeah, it was a big purging, and a lot of it was just like, I remember just feeling like my soul saying to me like, we're so glad you came back to yourself. We're so like, just over and over again. And it was just like, at like session after session. And I think it was like, it's really interesting around this topic of like coming to into deeper love with yourself, because I think that like there is a long period of time where you're like running and maybe searching for it in other places, or, you know, you're kind of like really, you're afraid to like really go into that place.
Oh yeah.
For lots of different reasons, you know? But then like actually being able to come back and be like, it's okay. Like I'm safe with me, and like start mm-hmm. to like rebuild those bonds, because, you know, to be fully real, there were a lot of experiences that I had had where I was not particularly safe with myself. Like, I don't know that I really trusted myself to have my best interests at heart. Yeah. I didn't trust myself to know what was best for me. And so you kind of have to like start to like break down those, I don't know, like start to work through those layers of those experiences. And it really is a forgiveness process. Yeah, at least it was for me.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is that we make so many of these decisions when we are so young. We are literally like 15, 16, yeah. 18, 21, like we're babies, you know? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like that at the time. At the time, it really feels like, ah, oh, we know what we're doing. You know, this is a conscious decision that we're making. But the truth is that we have so little experience for the most part to make these judgments. And then we inevitably make mistakes. And then it's like, what do we do with the mistake? Do we turn it into, you know, a place of hatred or defeat or resentment to ourselves? Or do we recognize that this is just a part of life, and learning to like give ourselves grace is the number one. Yeah. I'm just like, if you take away nothing else from this podcast, just attempt to connect with grace, because for me, I think that was like the most powerful, the biggest sort of like turning point that I was able to have. Because if you use your mistakes against yourself, if you mm-hmm. use that to fuel, you know, the next decision that you make, you're always going to be trapped in that loop of, you know, living a life that doesn't feel good. And I totally agree with what you said about like the outsourcing your love and not feeling safe with yourself. And for me, it comes back to like, how can I just be and not be angry or sad or scared or whatever, like at myself? And
yeah,
choosing grace is like what has saved me so many times.
Yeah. I mean, it's so important. I love that you bring that up, because I think that like a lot of times we presuppose that we're perfect, even though yeah. people say like, nobody's perfect. And then they're mm-hmm. like, but you have to do things this way.
Yes,
and you
yes,
have
yes,
to
yes.
like behave like this. And like, if you do this, then you're wrong or bad or whatever. Like there's so much messaging. And it's like, I think that coming back to grace of like, I'm, you know what, I'm not perfect. And so I made this mistake. And like, what did I learn? And like, how did I grow? And like, whatever, like, or yeah, like there's so much, it's such fertile ground, our mistakes. But I think that like, we aren't necessarily taught that always. And I think that like, and I think too, like, I know for a long time when I made a mistake, it was, the story was more like, I'm so stupid. Of course, I mean, I should have never trusted myself to handle this because, like, I've never been. And then you bring up all the stuff from the past or whatever.
Yeah.
And people talk about, you know, how sometimes we talk to ourselves in a way that we would never, ever dream of talking to someone that we love or whatever. I think that's like a really important thing to note. But it's also like it takes time and consciousness and awareness and grace to like actually come into a habit of like realizing when you're feeding into like those negative stories and that negative self-talk of like, you know, I made a mistake and that makes me stupid and bad and wrong and all this different stuff. And being able to like bring awareness in and grace in, and however you do it at the beginning, because there's no, whether it is helpful to like imagine your highest self or, you know, the energy of grace, like the embodiment of that to come in and like provide her perspective on the situation or whatever works for you. But I think that like that is such an important piece. And I think too, like, this is a process. Like I still have moments and likely, I mean, everyone has moments where you're not in the most loving, you're not being the most loving to yourself. Like it happens. Oh, yeah. We're still human. We're still living in this world. It's not like, you know, like, and then all my work was done. I loved myself in every way. And like, no, I mean, it happens, you know? But I think that like, yeah, like being able to become more aware and like grow more through little baby steps of like, how can I love myself a little bit better in this situation, in this day, in this way? What can I notice about the way that I'm loving myself within this experience, with this substance, with this construct, in this room? Yeah, it's my big piece that I would say.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you, Brenna.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like this was a very fluid conversation, but also so important. And I would love for you to share where people can find you, what you may have coming up, what's going on.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm based in New York. I have in-person sessions in New York. So if you're here, please reach out. I would love to meet you in person and do some facilitation here in the city. I am on Instagram at Eliza Gets Into It, ElizaGetIntuit. Into it. I'm so punny and clever.
I love it. It's so punny and clever. And we'll link it below too.
Wonderful. I'm also doing some tarot readings and like full moon, new moon ceremonies, cacao, sound healing. I'm recording some kids' songs. So I used to be a teacher. I love working with kids. And I really want to like bring them into some of my breathwork and energy healing facilitation. But I've been struggling to figure out a way how. And I think the songs are going to be a little bit of an entry. So look out for that. Follow me on the gram. Let's, you know, chat in my DMs. I love just connecting with people and that's really what I'm all about. So thank you for having me. I loved it.
Oh, of course. And yeah, we'll link Elizabeth's Instagram below. I love like classic manifesting generator doing like all of the different things. And
oh
like,
my God, so many things. Yes.
But it's so beautiful. And, yes, for everyone that's listening, I will see you next week. Bye.
Beautiful. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the For Your Healing Pleasure podcast. You can listen to us on all podcast platforms as well as watch the video on YouTube. To keep up with this podcast, please subscribe. And if you liked what you heard, please leave us a review. I really appreciate it. To keep up with Spiritum Meditation and this podcast, you can follow me on Instagram at Spiritum Meditation. If you would like to book a session with me, you can do so at spiritummeditation.com.